You're listening to Well Met.
Well Met.
A Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com.
Well Met.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 126 of Well Met. We're a Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BluesPro.com. Today is Monday, October 2nd. Dang it, that was on a roll, 2017. Whew, from Studio 6 in Denver, Colorado. I'm John Horstman. With me, of course, is the crew. First, from Nashua, Nashua, New Hampshire. It is our resident wild specialist, Danny Donuts. Hey, Danny.
Hey, John. How's it going?
It's going good, man. How are you?
Good. Excited to do the podcast this week. Got some good stuff coming up.
Yeah, it was great having Control on last week, but I kind of just missed our crew, you know, just having the boys back together again. And
the boys are back.
The boys are back. The boys are back in town. The boys are back in town. Ow, ow, ow. Hey, Ray C591. The first three digits to his phone number, ladies. Hey, you only need seven more and you've got it. So, hey, Ray, welcome back, dude.
Well, after that start, it feels like I'm right at home. So, thank you, John. Really appreciate it.
You got it.
And oh, man. And ironically, I know this is very hard to believe. I'm taken. So you won't be getting those last seven digits.
Ooh. That's fine. That's fine.
I know.
Just makes it's, people it's by want my mom. More.
Don't you remember it?
I was going to say, just go. What great aunt took you to prom this week? Okay. Anyways.
I'm 23, John. I hope none of them.
I hope you're not going to prom either. That might be kind of weird. Anyways, Ray, it's good to have you back. You've had a busy week though, man. You've been casting some Tespa, casting some Pokemon, hanging out with Korra. We're huge fans of Korra on Well Met, so a little bit jealous there.
Yeah, I pretty much spent a whole week with Korra casting Hearthstone in Burbank, California at the ESL Studios. And then Korra and I got hired by Pokemon immediately after. So this was in the same week. So we left Sunday to get to Burbank on Sunday, casted Tespa Monday, Tuesday, left on Wednesday. And then Thursday we had off. And then Friday we both went to Connecticut to cast Pokemon Saturday and Sunday.
Dang, so that's been a busy week.
It's been a week. I'm actually still surprised that all that happened in 1 week.
How do you feel like it went for Tespa?
For Tespa, I think I was really nervous at the beginning because of the way that the production was. It's just a lot. Like, you're not used to having this professional setting with all these cameras in your face. And they also told me nothing. I had no information on anything. I didn't know who was playing. I didn't know the teams. I didn't even know which camera to look at because there was a bunch of cameras. They told me literally nothing. Wow. We got there and they just threw us in.
So what you're saying is how you prepare for every episode of Well Met. Minus the makeup.
Actually, though. That's actually
you did
what
look
happened.
Really good. You looked like you had it completely under control. I did watch a lot of that. So you looked pretty good.
Yeah, I got to see my best. A good chunk, dude. You would never have known that.
So. Yeah, I tried my best. I think it was really rocky at the beginning because, I mean, it was literally like once the makeup was done, they were like, all right, we're going live. And then that was it. Like, no information on the team, no information on the players, no information on the classes. Like, I was seeing the classes as they were coming up on the stream screen. So, like, the classes go up and they have, like, Druid, Paladin, Priest, whatever, right? So as everybody else is seeing it, this is the first time I'm seeing it as well. There's no preparation here. So in my head, I'm thinking, okay, it's this versus this, and then we're going to see the bans in 5 seconds, and then Cora's going to ask me what I think of the matchup. So I have to analyze all of this in the matter of like 5 or 10 seconds, and then it was Tespa, so half the team's banned wrong, which means like you have to, like, in my head, I was like, all right, I got this.
Banned wrong.
They did. And because in my head, I was like, all right, they just banned this, and then the other team's going to ban this, and then all of a sudden, that is not the case, and you have no idea what's going on, and you have to figure out, all right, now that they messed up the ban, how is this matchup going to play up? And you have to explain all this, and this is all happening, like, there's no stops, you know what I mean? Sure. It's live. This is, like, all within the course of, like, 10 to 20 seconds at most. So it was just a lot, especially at the very beginning of it, and I was really flustered and caught off guard. But towards the end, I think I got the hang of it.
It sounds like something that would make you a better caster a lot more quickly, though, when you have to kind of do that. Do you
trial by fire?
So? Yeah, just kind of going in, or, you know, it sounds like it looked like you handled it really well. And
sounds I like, hope so.
Sounds like I you probably so. Learned a lot, too.
I definitely learned a lot, and I have more respect for the casters than I did before, although I'll still call them out for being bad if I think they're bad, but
don't we all?
I'll also take that L if I was bad, but I tried my best, so that's all you can do, right?
Yeah, I thought you did great, man. So kudos to you. Blizzard, keep hiring them. We really like it. No thanks, though, for no well-met shout-outs. Dang.
I couldn't even think straight half the time. Like when I got in between the sets, they were like, hey, you should really try to promote yourself more. And I was like, wait, I'm allowed to do that? I thought like I'd get like the ban hammer for just saying like I was on Panda Global or something, because that's not Blizzard related. Like I didn't even know what I could and couldn't say.
You can say, you know where you can learn to play better? At wellmet.blizzbro.com. You might hear my voice there. Let me be your agent, Ray. I'll put some of those things in the contract, and then, you know, we'll make it good.
All right, John. I will feel very safe as long as I have you standing next to me.
Don't flatter. Let's go into the news.
This week in Hearthstone, Heroes of Warcraft.
Whew, slow news week, boys. Slow news week. So we're going to have to stretch this one. I'm just kidding. We've got a pretty good strategy segment this week. I think you will all enjoy and find very applicable to your everyday Hearthstone lives. But first, let's discuss the big news. It's been on everybody's mind. Probably one of the most anticipated news pieces of the year. What will the October season rank card back be? Yeah, that's it. You know, everyone's really, really pumped.
They're really hyped about that news.
They're really pumped. Studio audience, please curb your enthusiasm for just a moment.
That's Let a me calmer speak. Clap. That's a calmer clap than normal.
It is. Yeah. I actually have a small applause and a big applause on this soundboard, and I just never use the small applause. I'm like, I need to use that more.
I mean, this is very small applause worthy if this is all the news that we're getting coming out of this week. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. But hey, it's the Unholy Horror Nights card back. And I think it's pretty good, right? It's got this kind of, it's got like this skull in the middle with tusks, a green glowing Hearthstone logo in the middle, some browns and orange. I will honestly say, even though the color scheme is not my jam, this is the type of art I like for my Hearthstone card backs. Very simple, minimal, and, you know, kind of intimidating, you know?
I don't know. I think the yellow and green's pretty good. We have way too many card backs that are purple. There's like 20 purple card totally. Backs. We need something that's not purple. Like the two new Twitch Prime ones. They're both purple, like dark purple and then like a purple, lightish purple one.
Purple void and purple light.
I'm a level with you here. I'm colorblind, so I have no idea. I use the basic card back.
You don't use the legend card back?
Oh God, no! I use the basic card back. That way,
Tespa baby.
I mean, I do have the Tespa one now, but
I don't. I sent in a question for that.
I will not be using it once I get it. I have a strict rule for myself. I always play with the basic card back. Even if I get Golden Celebration card back, I'm still going to play with the basic one.
Just because I want a two-faced liar. When you came on this show early on, I think it was before you were even a host, you discussed and you said the same thing. I only use the basic card back. I don't want to give people any other kind of information about, you know, who I am or how much I've played. But you said if I got the Tespa, I would probably equip it. So
I said probably.
That I think you said basically. You basically said you were going to equip it without being like, I absolutely will equip it. So
honestly, I probably just said that so I could get hired by Tespa. I'm not gonna lie. Gotta get that good PR, man.
Playing that long game. 7 months later, here we are.
It's like when somebody requests a song and they just request a song that's just completely awful. It's one of those meme songs. I'm just like, no, I'm not playing this. And they're like, but I donated for it. I'm like, it's unfortunate for you, bud.
That's rude. I didn't know
you
were so
rude. At that point,
you
go for a middle song. At that point, you're like, okay, you're not taking the meme song. And then you go in and you give some other like middle of the road song.
Yeah.
No.
That's how negotiation works.
And I'm
not
going
at one extreme and then you go in the middle.
So it's a strict rule.
I'm going to side with Danny here on this one just because I like it when Ray loses arguments on this show.
I don't know. Either way, if for like a Halloween card back, I feel like pumpkins or I think I already actually did pumpkins, but I don't know. It doesn't feel super Halloween-y because that's it's not even a good skeleton, honestly. Like it's like a mammoth Halloween. Or something. I get it, the year of the mammoth or whatever. Like I don't know, man. It's not very Halloween-y to me.
Somebody said in chat that it's the worst card back they ever put out, and I banned them. So that was
unban them. Hold on.
You can't. You don't have permission. Anyways, that's all we have for the news, and I'm really proud of us for getting a good 5 minutes out of that one. Kudos to us. Let's talk about some esports meta.
Beat them or join them.
Oh, no.
Oh, that voice is so hot. I want to marry whoever did the voiceover for that. That is Katie.
I was like...
Katie is the resident, like, babe, I need someone to record a voiceover for a thing, and I either don't have time or money to hire a professional. Bring her in. She does an awesome job. And can take all the time we need. So it's pretty great. All right. So this week, obviously, it's the start of new season. I want to hear, how did you guys do last season? Danny, let's start with you, man, because I'm sure you finished higher than Ray. Positive.
Well, I did finish. I finished what 370 something legend. But I was doing mostly at the end of the season best of fives and preparing for tournaments and other things like that. We actually had a pretty cool wild one where everyone got to ban a card, and we had 16 cards banned essentially. It was actually pretty neat playing in different formats and doing stuff like that.
That's pretty cool. I might have missed it. What did you run? What decks, or do you play a lot of different decks?
So a ton of things. I've played pretty much every class. I've been trying the variety. I was doing a lot of testing as well for the meta snapshot. We're getting that out soon for Tempo Storm. So I had to go and test a bunch of very interesting decks, like Dragon Warrior and stuff like that. Stuff that's not particularly good.
Okay, fair enough. Good. Well, hey, man, legend's all you need to make it on this show. It's all you need, man. Speaking of legend's all you need, hey, Ray, how'd you do this month?
I mean, well, this month I set a goal to just practice for tournaments and not play ladder. So I actually did not finish legend for the first time in about 2 years because I didn't play at all.
What a goal.
On the ladder.
What a goal.
Such a pretty good goal to set.
I'm setting a goal to take like 31 naps in the next 31 days.
No. I still played Hearthstone a lot. But I just wanted to practice for tournaments because playing on ladder was such bad practice due to the fact that you just banned Druid before the nerfs happened. That like ladder was effectively a waste of time. And after the nerfs happened, I mean, that's when I started doing the casting stuff, like almost like a week after that. So there was literally just no time to play once the nerfs hit for me. I was actually just not home for almost 2 weeks straight. And I was not, by the time I got home every night, I basically just passed out. Yeah. I was so tired. All those days are so long because even traveling, every traveling day, like when I traveled to California, like the day was, I mean, it probably took almost 12 hours to get there for me between like taking buses to the airport and then flying and then taking buses to the hotel and whatnot. So by the end of that day, I'd be dead. And then the casting days are like 12 plus hours because you have to be there early to do makeup, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada.
And boy, did Ray need makeup. Let me tell you, ladies and gents. He got like a spray tan in there that you could just take
off.
They
did. They actually did. No, that was actually a thing.
No way.
That was legitimately a thing.
They give you a little tan help?
They like used this like gun thing that was like when you pushed it, it like sprayed you. And they like did it all over my face and stuff.
Dang.
It was really weird. And then she like colored in my beard. Because it's like sometimes it's like pretty patchy. So she like, I don't know if it was like a mark.
Was it like a Sharpie or?
No, it was like some professional. It was like some professional thing. Like some type of like makeup, like pen, like brush or I don't know, but she colored it in.
I love the thought of having, because my beard would have to get colored in too. They'd probably just be like, can you just shave it all off and not do that. But I just love the idea of
like
seeing, was it a he or a she?
It was a she. It was actually Johnny Depp's makeup artist. They go all out, man. They have the big guns. When I got there, there was a dude that had my name on it with a card, and he called me like Mr. He called me Mr. Ray C, and I was like, nice.
Nice. He's like, okay.
We will go this way to your car, Mr. Racy. Is there anything I can do for you? And I was like, wow, they're going all out here. This is nice. I don't think I've ever been treated that well in my life.
Did they have bottled water, bottled waddle in the?
Yeah, they did.
All right,
they did.
Always ask for a bottle of water. That's my. Celebrity pro tip is if anyone ever asks you if they can get you something, always ask for a bottle of water. Trust me.
It was pretty surreal experience overall. I'm extremely grateful to Blizzard for letting me do all that.
That sounds so really cool, man.
Yeah. Like, that's why I didn't hit a legend, man. I was too busy doing other
too
things.
Too busy
for once
getting
in my
your
life.
Beard colored in. I get it. Fair enough.
Actually, though.
Poster of style.
Right. Oh man, that's too funny. I'm gonna have to find a way to make that into a show title. I'm just gonna put Ray. I'm gonna put a picture of Ray for our feature image, and I'm gonna just like scribble in a beard. This is what I'm gonna do. That's what it's gonna be. Oh, I am brilliant. Let's talk a little bit about esports this week in the meta. Obviously, TESPA went on. I'm not going to lie, Ray. I would not have tuned into TESPA this week if it wasn't for you being there. So I'm sorry. Can you give us a heads up on where we are with TESPA and kind of what went on this past week? Or were you too busy getting your beard colored in to
pay attention? I mean, I was the one talking about the games, remember? So, yeah, week one of TESPA was last week. Week two of TESPA is going on right now. It's 6 weeks, and then at the end of it, they have a top cut of, I forget what it was. It might have been top eight or something.
Is that going to be at BlizzCon?
I think the top four might play out at BlizzCon, but there isn't really details on that. I think they did last year. I'm pretty sure that they did last year. There's some type of LAN. There's always some type of LAN that happens for top four.
So. I think there was a LAN. It wasn't at BlizzCon, though. We had World Championships.
Oh, right, my God.
I just Rick and Morty'd that burp. I'm so sorry. It's so bad.
I don't think it's been announced. Like, not much has actually been announced for BlizzCon aside from the Tavern versus Tavern event. And I'd imagine that they're going to do some other things besides just that. I mean, they have to, right? There's no way that Hearthstone's not going to have a huge representation at BlizzCon like it always does.
Isn't HGG? Well, you've got HGG HCT, right?
HCT is not happening at BlizzCon.
Is it not? Oh my God.
No, that's happening after.
That's confirmed. We 100% know HCT is not happening at BlizzCon.
I thought one of the tournaments was, though.
No.
All right, fine. I trust you guys. I'm a month and a half getting back into it, so I will.
Yeah, there's nothing like professional Hearthstone related happening at BlizzCon, which is very odd to me. But I mean, it is what it is. They have the new esports arena, so they're probably going to do all the pro gaming stuff at the Blizzard esports arena thingy that they just built in Burbank.
Oh, it's the Hearthstone Invitational.
Yeah, that's a Tavern versus Tavern thing.
Tavern versus Tavern.
Sorry, I was thinking of Overwatch World Cup, which is why I was getting.
You're getting your games mixed up, John.
Get my games mixed up. They all start just bleeding into one. You know, card games and first person shooters have so much in common when it comes to esports. It's just insane.
Yeah. But one small thing I want to note about Tespa was that there were some really unique decks played, like Barnes Yashirage Druid, which is effectively Big Priest minus all the big cards except for Yashirage. And you just play all Druid spells. And it was fun to watch because one of the games they played with it, they didn't actually get the Barnes on turn four, but they were still able to win just by playing good Druid spells. Yeah. It was really cool.
Interesting. Well, that's cool. That's what's going on in Tespa this week, at least. Let's talk a little bit more. So at the beginning of the week, we have the Rat Race, which is a bunch of streamers and pro players and not pro players who race to first legend. And we got one. Somebody hit legend, thank God. And it was Hunter Ace, who was first on online, and Amnesiac was actually first for the LAN portion to win the October Rat Race. So, hey! Cool. Awesome, neat. Anyways, Hunter Ace did it with his Highlander Razakis Priest, which nobody has seen on ladder before ever, and it's not good at all. That's why he only had like a 67% win rate with it.
Yeah. Today's opposite day, if you guys didn't know.
So, just practicing for casting at Tespa.
You're going to do really poorly.
Thanks. Thanks for that feedback. Yeah, so that went on. Any thoughts on the Rat Race for you guys? Like, are you guys into other people who race for first person legend? Do you want to do it someday?
I mean, for me personally, it would absolutely destroy me health wise. So I would never willingly participate in staying up that long and subjecting myself to all the physical and mental damage that it would cause.
Fair enough.
But if I had the stamina to do it, I would definitely do it.
I've tried it once. Didn't do too well, but I did go and reach legend within the first 2 days of playing.
Hmm.
I did take a nap. I did take a nap though. I didn't go stay up the entire time. Hey,
commit.
I played for like 18 hours straight. That's a lot. Oh. That's a lot of playing.
Ray, I'm hearing a lot of excuses here. I need you to weigh in.
I mean, all I hear is I played for 18 hours when I could have played for 24 hours. So.
Well, I wasn't going to win at that point. Someone already beat me there.
I'm kidding.
I think
that the decks played in the rat race weren't particularly interesting. I kept tabs on it. It was all pretty standard, just tier one decks. Nobody actually was able to climb with anything janky or wacky, or nobody had something like they had this deck specifically built to dominate the ladder system so they could win the rat race. That did not happen. And it was pretty much what I expected. Just people playing meta decks, and if you high roll enough times, you'll get there before somebody else, because somebody has to win, right?
Right. That's kind of how I have always felt with the beginning of this season. It's never been exceptionally interesting to me, because to your exact point, especially towards the top, you usually only have two or three decks represented. Mm-hmm. So then it just becomes a series of coin flips and high rolls and whoever did that the most. Not taking away from anything that Hunter Ace did or Amnesiac. Obviously, there is a level of skill involved and a level of endurance that is required to even play that long and play at a high enough level to do that, especially with a deck like Highlander Ruzakis Priest, which is not a low barrier to entry deck. I don't know if I would say it's a high skill ceiling deck, but I would definitely not say that somebody brand new, the first deck I'm giving them is not going to be Highlander Ruzakis Priest. There's a lot going on there. And but I think overall it's kind of just a boring, not a boring, but it's just you take unexceptional decks from like a design standpoint, ones that are just very solid decks, and you try to smash as many games as you can to get to Legend. Mm-hmm. And I think that just kind of, I don't know, like it's an accomplishment within itself, but it's not definitely doesn't show off, in my opinion, the best parts of Hearthstone. The parts of Hearthstone that really are important, really matter, and really what's the word I'm looking for? Can't think of the right word. It really demonstrates.
Like
it doesn't really doesn't demonstrate like the health of the game, the creativity involved. Instead, it ends up being just percentages. How much can you influence that percentage point to get one percentage point win point over the other guys or gals that you're racing? And I don't know. It's mostly uninteresting to me, but I'm glad they do it. I still think it's interesting. I mean, we've talked about it for 10 minutes on this show now, so we wouldn't if it was just stupid.
I mean, so what happens is a lot of the time towards the end, or I guess even the middle, is that the only people you're playing against, the only people that are actually on the same level as you at that point rank-wise, are the other people in the race. So you're just continuously queuing into the same however many people over and over and over and over again. And at that point, it can get a little toxic because people are trying to counter-queue each other because they know they're going to queue into each other because there's nobody else at that high ranked because they're the ones racing, right? So it gets a little odd, and then you start teching for the other racers, and it's a whole metagame that is only existent at that point in time, just because, I mean, it's only a certain number of players, right? So it's really interesting in that sense, where you can tech for the other racers because you know you're going to hit them on the ladder over and over again, but it just becomes repetitious. Like, you just see the same matchups over and over again. You see the same people literally playing against each other over and over and over again. So yeah. At some point, it gets a little bit dry for me as a spectator. I watched it on and off because I couldn't just sit there and watch it because it was just way too repetitive.
It's great background to like wash your cat to or vacuum your living room, but it's not really anything I would sit down with a journal and take notes on as that, unless you're planning a marathon of Hearthstone play. So All right. Let's talk about this, though, because at the end of the day, Hunter Ace's win rate was pretty insane. And Highlander Razakis Priest has gotten to a point where I don't know if I would call it oppressive, but it's definitely gotten to a point in the game where it's to the community itself and to players who are playing against it who aren't the best players in the world are kind of like, wow, this is really overpowered. This is a really strong deck. And so we want to go ahead and take some time on how to beat Highlander Razakis Priest. And I don't have a sounder for this, so I'm just going to play this one again because I like it. Always good, right? You can never go wrong with that one. Anyways, so with Hunter Ace solidifying the strength of Highlander Razakis Priest, we here at Well Met wanted to do what we could to give you a leg up on the ladder this month. You're going to be facing it a lot, and we want to help you out. So first, let me take you through Hunter Ace's deck list, because I think that's going to be one of the most important pieces. Well, what is it? What's typically in the deck? First, at zero mana, you have one silence. By the way, this is going to be all one ofs. I'm not even going to tell you how many it's running. It's one of. So you have Silence, Holy Smite, Northshire Cleric, Pint Size Potion. That's the spell that gives all enemy minions -3 attack that turn only. Potion of Madness, which then takes control of an enemy minion with 2 or less attack during that turn. Power Word Shield, Mind Blast, Radiant Elemental. Radiant Elemental is a newer card with, Journey to Un'Goro. It's a 2 mana, 2/3. Your spells cost 1 less. Shadow Visions, discover a copy of a spell in your deck. That's also 2 mana. Shadow Word Pain, Spirit Lash. Well, that's a lifesteal card. Deal 1 damage to all minions. And that's a 2 mana spell. Curious Glimmer Root. We talked about this one at length on the show when Un'Goro was first getting announced. It's a 3 mana, 3/3 with a battle cry. Look at three cards. Guess which one started in your opponent's deck and get a copy of it. Kind of a cool way to build your deck out. Cabal Talon Priest. Ray, wake up. Ray.
I'm awake.
Hey, wake up. I need you to wake up. This is important. I need to tell you what's in this deck. Shadow Word Death, Priest of the Feast. Shadow Word Horror. Destroy all minions with 2 or less attack. Lyra, the Sun Shard. That's a legendary 5 mana, 3/5 elemental. Whenever you cast a spell, add a random priest spell to your hand. Raza, the Chained. Battlecry, if your deck has no duplicates, your hero power costs 0. This game, that's a 5 mana, 5/5. Dragonfire Potion, Holy Fire, Prophet Velen, Shadow Reaper Anduin. That's one of the new, not Death Hunters. Oh my God. Death Knights.
Death Knights.
It's an 8 mana legendary hero card. Reads Battlecry, destroy all minions with 5 or more attack and gives you 5 armor. Then you've got Blood Mage Thelnos, Dirty Rat, Galocker Crawler, Loot Hoarder, Novice Engineer, Wild Pyromancer, Acolyte of Pain, and Kazakus, which of course is the 4 mana 3/3 legendary spell. Reads Battlecry, if your deck has no duplicates, create a custom spell. We saw that a lot with Reno Warlock back in the days before Reno cycled out. Okay, so that's about.
Can I interrupt real quick?
Yeah.
If you're playing this deck in Wild, there's going to be a couple key substitutions. You're going to be seeing Reno in the deck. Reno is definitely going to be the deck because he's really powerful. And instead of Velen, you're typically going to see Spawn of Shadows. And Spawn of Shadows is the 4 mana 5/4 with Inspire, deal 4 damage to both heroes. So that's essentially the OTK instead of Velen in Wild.
Dang. That's kind of cool. Awesome. All right. So we talked through the deck list. Ray, what are the key cards? What are the big important cards in that deck? Obviously, with 31 ofs, every card kind of has to be impactful in some way, but there obviously are going to be some really important cards here.
I mean, the key cards in the deck are Raza the Unchained and Shadow Reaper Anduin. That's your win condition. Just machine gun down your opponent's life total every time you play another card. But the interesting cards that he chose to play in this deck that are a little bit not so standard would be Holy Fire, which is a nod to Dragon Scale, or Cobalt Dragonbane, I believe it is what the card is called. It's the 5-mana dragon that is a 4/4 that gives a minion +3 attack at the end of the turn. Priest usually has a very hard time dealing with it.
Makes sense.
Just because Dragon Fire Potion obviously doesn't hit it because it's a dragon, and most likely they've already probably wanted to Shadow or Death something else, especially if they're playing in something like a Paladin deck or something. The Shadow or Death's probably going to be used on something that gets buffed by Blessing of Kings, yada, yada, yada. So Hunter Ace decided to use Holy Fire just as a means to deal with cards that people were teching in the deck, in their decks against Priest. So it's kind of like they're trying to go one step above you, and then you go one step above them. But outside of that card, there wasn't really anything too interesting about the list.
Sure. Are those the only two key cards and win conditions there, or are there kind of other aces in the pocket there?
I mean, you play Prophet Velen, right, to try to exacerbate the damage output you can do in one turn, and you play Mind Blast to help win mirror matches or control mirrors, because Prophet Velen plus Radiant Elemental Mind Blast, you can do upwards of 30-something damage per turn, because you're hero powering in between every time for 4.
You also use Lyra to generate extra cards as well, so that if you go in with a Shadow Reaper and you just are empty with your hand, you can't start playing things. A Lyra can just keep generating that the cards to keep putting damage on, put that pressure on.
Okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
What would you say the skill cap is for this deck? If you've got a player who's sitting around rank 10 to 15, do you think that this is a good deck to try to pilot, or would you recommend to run a simpler, different deck that might do well against it?
I mean, I always advocate just playing tier 1 decks because they're going to be better than everything else. I think that it's fairly straightforward. You just want to get the Raza and the Shadow Reaper Anduin. A subpar player could beat any pro player if they go Raza into Anduin and the other person doesn't do that. The strategy is just fairly straightforward. Once you play the deck a couple times, you won't forget to ping your opponent's face every time you play a card, which is something that a lot of people do when they first start playing the deck. They forget, oh, I forgot to hero power here because I'm playing my cards too fast. You'll learn to slow down. You'll learn to do that stuff over just the course of a few games. But I would say it's not that difficult. But to play it to its full potential, maybe there are some matchups that are kind of hard to play. But
there are definitely some difficult turns, too, where you have if you're in Shadow Reaper mode and you play Lyra, you typically have to go relatively quickly if you want to be as efficient as possible. So sometimes when you'll go and you'll think out your turn normally for 20 or 30 seconds before playing your hand, so you're going to have to start immediately, because the Lyra animation compounds upon the Raza, the Anduin animation, and it keeps going off. It stalls longer and longer and longer every time. So you have to really keep, you have to keep up with it to get as much damage in as possible.
Yeah, that's one thing I see a lot of players do, is they think too long about their turns. To play this deck to its full potential, you really need to have that as almost muscle memory, where you know what you have to do right off the bat, so you can just do it like that. Like, you can just play the cards. You have to know what you want to do as soon as the turn starts. But that comes with practice. And I say I think that this deck is definitely good enough that you can just pick it up as a newer player and do well with it just because of how powerful it is. And the basic strategy is fairly easy to comprehend.
That's really interesting.
And you can develop into a really powerful place too. You can develop up over the time.
That's really interesting to me because generally speaking, the Highlander type decks, the decks that only have copy of one ofs are typically associated with higher skill caps and higher skill cost of entry. And so to kind of hear that this is a relatively straightforward deck, I think should be pretty, should feel pretty good for newer players. I don't know what the overall cost of it is, but I do know there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 6 legendaries in there. So that's 20% of your cards are going to be, right? Is that 20? Yeah, 20% of your cards are going to be legendaries. So take that for what it's worth. Danny, are there any inherent counters to this deck? Like, if you're like, I refuse to play this deck because it's way too slow, or I'm not that guy. Are there any decks in your mind that stand out as great counters?
Well, typically to beat the deck, you got to consider that this is a combo deck. So you're going to want to play something that counters combo. So any aggro deck in the moment is typically good. Aggro and mid-range, basically. I like Paladin at the moment. Paladin is definitely something that can do semi-well against this.
Sure. Great. Ray, would you agree?
If I were to want to counter this deck, I would play something like a Quest Mage. Paladin is also fine if you're playing double Cobalt Scalebane with like the Curator package. But if I actually, if my goal was to strictly beat this deck, I would be playing something along the lines of Quest Mage or
you could
Quest
also go
Rogue.
Hunter can smork them down. You can do that. It's not as effective.
Hunter can smork them down, but if you really just want to just put Priest into the ground, Quest Mage is what you're going to want to master.
Are there any decks that you guys can think of that Highlander Priest just wins basically every time? So if someone's playing like, I'm going to play this Warrior deck, and they queue up against Razakis Priest to not get frustrated if they lose continually because it's just not a deck made for it?
I mean, this deck is going to destroy any type of control Warlock deck just because they have no life gain in Standard anymore. So any slow decks, this deck will just kind of dominate most of the time.
Sure. Any other ones you can think of, Danny?
No, pretty much any control deck. Cool. Combo beats control.
All right. So we've got a baseline. We've got a baseline. So let's just say we're like, I don't want to play Razakis Priest. I don't want to play it. But I want to know what the key is to beating this deck. You've already said a couple is to basically beat it before the combo comes out, stall the combo if you can, and that's about it. But what other ones are out there as far as how to beat Razakis Priest? If you're just another kind of standard deck, you don't exceptionally have a really high or really low win rate against the deck.
Or attack minions and dragons. That's really what you want to be putting in your deck. I mean, I saw people at the ACT Summer Prelim Championships or whatever it was playing Chillwind Yeti in their decks just as a nod to Priest, which it was honestly very awkward to see, but it made sense.
Yeah. Danny, anything else you can think of?
In my mind, it's a combo deck, so you want to go and beat, you either have to get it done before the combo or do something crazy and finish them off before their combo.
Sure. What are kind of the key turns to you and like key setup turns that you should be looking for like identifying those moments where you're you know, your opponent setting up a combo or might have some cards in their hand where, you know, things are going to take a turn for the worst.
I think sure. Sorry.
You don't want to play anything really big into turn eight. If you even keep your minions at like four health or at that point and spread the board wide, typically that's a little bit better than going in and buffing up one big minion, because Shadow Reaper Anduin on turn eight is something that'll come down fairly frequently.
Cool. So turn eight, what else?
I had something along that line, but the complete opposite, actually. Like, it's on the same train of thought as playing around Shadow Reaper Anduin, but it's the opposite. You want to play into their AoE sometimes, because they're a deck of one-ofs, right? So if you're in an unfavorable matchup, sometimes just going all in is more beneficial than to just kind of stagger out your threats and play around their AoE. Because if you go all in, you're going to win more of the time if they don't have the answer than if you stagger out your threats, because you just give them more time to draw the answers, or just more time to be able to set up their combo and just kind of kill you.
Does Razakis Priest ever like keep Anduin in their opening hand?
100%.
In the mirror, definitely.
So if you've got it, so what's the chances of, if you're not hard mulliganing for it, what's, do you know the odds kind of off the top of your head of what the chances of them being having Anduin by turn eight are? I think, Ray, what I'm hearing from you is there's a lower than 50% chance that they're going to have Anduin on turn eight, and to just try not to play around it.
Well, I'm not necessarily saying play around Anduin. I'm saying play around all of their AoE, like Dragonfire Potion, Pint Size, Horror combos. Or even, I mean, this list isn't playing Holy Nova, but some lists play Holy Nova. Just like try to not fixate on playing around those cards, because they are one ofs, and a lot of the time they won't actually have that.
Cool. All right, that sounds good. Are there any other key things, key turns that you can think of? I know a lot of people, like, when I was doing some research for this one, because I haven't actually piloted this deck a whole lot. It was, if you see Raza the Chained on turn five, just concede. But besides that, you know, so obviously turn five, you're looking for, your opponent's looking for to put Raza down as soon as possible, right? Like that's a key thing that the Razakis Priest is trying to do. Is that right?
Of course. Yeah. That's their main goal. You just want to play Raza on five and do one on eight. But one thing that's going to help you in this matchup that's more of a high-level strategy is to track their hand. If you notice that they've been holding cards for a very long time in the early game, it's most likely going to be some type of combo piece or a Dragonfire Potion or something like that, because a lot of them just end up holding their AoE just because it's so rare to actually find it after the mulligan that you know you're going to need it by turn six, so you just end up keeping it in the opening hand kind of thing.
Sure. Are there any tech cards that you think can help out with this one? One thing that I've heard about is that Dirty Rat can be really good. And then as soon as I saw that, and I saw a lot of people doing that, about 2 weeks ago is when I saw the first comment saying tech Dirty Rats to do better. And about 3 or 4 days ago, I've been seeing people to actually advise against that and be like, it actually doesn't help that much anymore. Most people are expecting it now. Do you think Dirty Rat is a good tech card against Razakis Priest? And are there any other good cards that can really kind of help you gain a few percentage points in that matchup?
I mean, like I said earlier, four attack minions and dragons are the best neutral strategy that you can go with there, where you're not going all out and just playing a deck specifically designed to beat Priest, where you can just go with like tech cards. But as far as Dirty Rat goes, I would say it's pretty hit or miss. I mean, it's not going to be that amazing, but sometimes it can just win you the game, obviously.
What do you think, Danny? What are your thoughts on tech cards against Razakis Priest?
Well, for to tech this matchup, I mean, it really depends on what you're playing, but the Dirty Rat is definitely something to consider. Other things, while a bit meme-y, if you're playing, like I was playing Hand Buff Paladin recently, you can play Mindbreaker, the minion, 3-mana 2/5 that disables hero powers. And while that's a bit of a meme to counter the deck, it's not as effective because as soon as you drop that down while your opponent's playing Shadow Reaper Anduin, they can't, obviously they can't use their hero power. But however, they're just going to go and try to clear away the minion. It's not as effective as possible, but if you can go and get some hand buffs on it, potentially get it up to 4 attack or something, drop that down, it's relatively difficult for them to get rid of that.
I'm fine with meme counters, especially considering a lot of our listeners are, you know, rank 8 and below. A lot of times those are really, really important tech changes. Obviously, once you're at rank 5, if you're, you know, if you're 5 and above, if you're relying on meme counters, beware. But if you're not, and you're just trying to gain some percentages against a really frustrating matchup for you, you know, that's not bad. Are there any other kind of meme-y or cheeky counters that you guys can think of? I love cheeky counters. They're fun. Even if you don't win all the time with it, I think they're fun.
I mean, as far as cards go, I think we've touched on mainly...
There's one more, if I could drop it in, that I can think of. You can use Cold Light Oracle as to overdraw mm-hmm. your opponent. That's one of the things you see in a lot of matches. Your opponent's trying to draw a lot of cards. If you go in and you use Cold Light Oracle, if you're playing like a control matchup, your opponent's going to overdraw. If they go and they're trying to keep their card management at 9 cards so they don't overdraw, and then you play your Cold Light Oracle, they overdraw for 2 cards. And then if they discard Raza or the Death Knight, then it's pretty much an auto win. So Cold Light Oracle in a control matchup is typically something that you want you'd want to use to your advantage.
Cool.
That's really cool. The other route to go is just to play a deck that has a guaranteed win once they pull off some type of combo, which would be like Jungle Giants is a good example. Once you get the quest done and you get your Barnabas, like you basically just win the game because all your creatures are free. They can't deal with that kind of pressure. Quest Mage, once you get the quest done, you combo them, they're just dead. Quest Rogue, same thing. Get the quest done, combo them dead. Decks that have just very clear win conditions. And like you said, Cold Light Oracle, so decks like Dead Man's Hand are going to be really effective against Priest because you can just mill them, and you can mill them consistently. And it has like a very definite win condition if they're not going to be dying by the combo.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, boys. Any other tips you got? Any other things that people should know when going up against this Highlander Razakis priest?
I think we've touched upon pretty much everything. I don't know. What about you? What do you think, Danny?
Yeah, I think we did pretty well.
Cool.
Just be careful in the mirror. The mirror match is definitely a little bit more intricate than you'd think. Potion of Madness is one of the things that really has screwed me a lot in the mirror match. That's one of the things that I definitely pay attention to, making sure to play around that if it's getting late into the game and they haven't played it.
Yeah, be cognizant of their range in terms of damage as well. If you've seen they've taken a 1-mana Kazakus potion that they've been holding forever, they can just do insane amounts of damage with Prophet Velen later on in the game.
Cool. Well, thank you guys. Thank you for your expertise. I hope that to you listeners at home, I hope this helps you as we see the inevitable increase in Razakis Priest decks going further into October. And I would love to hear your thoughts either on Twitter at WellMet Podcast or email us wellmet@bluesbro.com. On segments like this, ones where we diagnose a little bit deeper, something that is a little bit more niche. It's not really broad. It's a bit more niche, but much more informational and informative, I think. So let us know what you think. Either of those two channels are great to do that. Danny, let's continue. I forgot where we left off last week on our rookie mistakes, aka kick tripod mistakes that we talked about. So, Ray, I don't know if you you obviously weren't here last week, but I doubt you had time to listen to the show. We started talking a little bit about just some basic rookie mistakes that players will make, and Danny hit on a couple last week. And we didn't get all the way through the list because we were going long already with control there. Danny, you remember which one we left off on?
We left off on the one right there, not losing sight of the macro in the micro, essentially.
Okay.
Ooh, I like this. Awesome. I like this topic.
So break that down for me, Danny. What do you mean as far as a rookie mistake is losing sight of the macro in the micro?
Sure. Just because you have a specific card in your hand and you have a specific mana, you don't necessarily need to play the card. So let's say you're playing the Razakis Priest and you have a Holy Nova. You have a, what is that? The Holy Nova? That's the spell. You don't necessarily have to play it if they have like a little weak board. You can wait and get a little bit more value from it. So, and also like not using resources when you know that you're going to need them later on.
Mm-hmm. And when you have a macro game plan, which is basically a game plan that you are going into the match with, so say your Razakis Priest or whatever, you have the macro game plan of getting Kazakis and then getting Anduin and then just playing as many cards as you can and killing them, you have to also be aware of the micro game plan that you have to develop when you're in the game. Sometimes you are not dealt good hands, and one thing that you need to realize is that you might have to use cards that you want to save for later earlier than necessary in order to be able to get to the late game or just win using an alternate game plan. The perfect example of this is when I played against Dr. Jinky Ninky on stream at DreamHack, and I did not have any of the combo pieces. I had just absolutely an awkward hand, and I ended up just playing minions. I played a minion on turn 3, turn 4, turn 5, and then I drew Kazakis and just got a one mana potion to buff my minions out of range of his AoE, and I ended up just beating him down on the board instead of getting any of the combo pieces. He had Raza on 5 and Anduin on 6 or 8, and he still ended up losing just because he couldn't deal with my board, because I was able to recognize that if I want to win this game, I need to just do something. I need to pressure him in some way because he's drawing a million cards. He's getting everything that he needs, and I'm getting none of that. And sometimes you just need to have that micro game plan of just being able to scrape together some way to win.
I think that's a great segue into this next one, unless you have anything else you wanted to hit on this one, Danny.
No, it's cool. Pretty good.
The second one is not playing to your outs. So rookies will not play to their outs. They'll get stuck on a win condition, as Ray was just speaking about. So how do you recognize your outs? What does that look like for a pro player? Ray, I can say confidently that one of the things that you've worked on with me for coaching, besides being in awe of my BM game, was playing to my outs and constantly counting, you know, when I have lethal and what cards can get us there and what the chances are of drawing that card to get us there and how you can kind of hedge your board state to get there. But what does it really mean to play to your outs, and how do rookie players not necessarily do that?
I think the best way to explain this is to give you a little like scenario. So you're at a low life total against an aggro deck, but your only way to really defeat the aggro deck, because you can never clear their board, is to kill them because they're also at a low life total. So instead of trading, you decide to go face, and now you give yourself an out to win the game. Whereas before, if you end up trading your minions into their minions, you're just delaying the inevitable. So like against Hunter, you know they're just going to eventually kill you with their hero power if you trade onto the board, because then you have nothing going for you. You don't actually have a way to kill them for a while, something like that. So just taking the risk of going face and hoping they don't have it is something that a lot of players won't do. They'll just play defensively, and they'll play to not lose instead of to actually win.
Danny.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty comprehensive, pretty good on that. I mean, I had a game earlier today where I was playing Malygos Shaman, where I ended up dropping Malygos on the board instead of holding it back to hold up for the combo pieces. And then I just hit him in the face for like 16 damage over the course of four turns. Whereas if I had gone with my initial game plan of waiting for burn spells, it might not have been fast enough to defeat my opponent.
Actually, one of the most crucial pieces of advice that I learned when I first started playing Hearthstone competitively was to not fixate on your card's effects. So back then, Miracle Rogue was really popular, and SI Agent was a pretty popular card, right? And in the mirror match, what I learned was that dropping SI Agent on turn 3 as just a vanilla 3-3 was actually very good, and good players would be doing that because they would know that board pressure meant a lot in the matchup. Whereas when I was a newer player, I would be like, okay, I need to save this to combo with it so I can get the value out of it on the, like, the card text value, like that 2 damage that you get from the combo. Where if I just played on turn 3 as a tempo play, it might actually just deal 3, 6, 9 damage, whatever it is, or use up my opponent's resources, giving them a worse turn. So it's little things like that that newer players really get caught up in, and they need to kind of look at value in a different way sometimes.
Ray, I'm sorry, Danny, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to go and say, like in Warlock, using life tap is very similar as well. Some players are afraid to tap and use their life as a resource. Use all the resources that you have, essentially.
Very good. I think both of those points are a really good segue into our last one. You guys are on the ball today. Thank you for looking at your show notes. Just looking at Ray when I say this. I'm just kidding. But what Danny put here is realizing your role. Danny, what does that mean, to realize your role?
Sure. So in every match, there's essentially one player who's beating the other down, and then one who's essentially trying to control the game. And then from, you got to realize that like a traditional control style deck, like maybe a control warrior or something like that, can actually be the beatdown in a matchup. So that might be a little bit confusing, but if your deck is necessarily, if it's a controlling deck, you can play your cards for tempo essentially and be faster on the board. That might be your win condition in a certain matchup.
Sure. Ray, what do you think? What does it look like for a player to realize their role? And how do you like get to a point of kind of a clarity and understanding of what that is?
Well, I mean, decks naturally just have a role where, I mean, if you're playing Pirate Warrior, you're aggro. If you're playing Razakis, you're control. But I would say a matchup like the Pirate Warrior Mirror match can help you learn the lesson to an exacerbated level. So in each Pirate Warrior Mirror match, you're going to have one player who is the beatdown and one player who's the control. And that just gets decided naturally by the way the game plays out and the hands that are dealt. So one player might get the really good early aggressive start, where the other player might get solid answers to them. And their way to win is to just armor up and outlast their opponent and run them out of resources. And then eventually you have one person with a handful of minions that has just enough life to survive. And then one person with no cards, no resources, no anything to do because they tried their best, but their opponent recognized that instead of going face, they just needed to deal with all their opponent's threats. Even though they are an aggro deck, they were just dealt a hand that was more reactive than proactive. So I would say like a matchup like the Pirate Warrior Mirror match or aggressive matchups against each other really help you learn which role you need to take better.
I feel like mirror matchups, just about any mirror matchup, just really kind of lets you know kind of when you're the beatdown and when you're the control. And so I would definitely say, but you're right, even two similar archetypes are going to be really important to kind of realizing when you're in which state. Danny, any other thoughts you wanted to add to this? This was your kind of topic submission, and dude, you crushed it. So thank you for coming up with these, because these were really helpful. Even for me, I'm like taking notes as we're doing the show, listening to what is being said. So yeah, kudos, dude.
Thanks.
Cool.
Next week, I'm going to try to make up some strong topics for us. I felt bad that I was gone effectively almost 2 weeks, but
yeah,
there was not much I could do about that. When Blizzard calls, you answer.
I'm sorry, I don't need your excuses. I just need more topics from you. Let's get out of here. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Honestly, we don't. Typically, we all come up with them collaboratively, but every once in a while, someone has a gem. And this was a gem, Danny. And step it up, Ray. I'm just kidding. All right, let's go ahead and get out of here. Before we do, we do want to thank our well-met legends, The Real Ben and Corel. Thank you so much for your support of the show. If you like Well-Met, want to help us be able to bring on bigger, better, more expensive guests, or improve the sound quality of the show, all that stuff, or you just want to say, hey, thanks, any little bit helps. $1 a month, $2 a month, $5, whatever you feel to get hours and hours of free entertainment, head on over to patreon.com/wellmetpodcast. Find out how you can get involved. But by no means should you feel obliged. We just want you to know it's there. And thank you anyways, just for listening. Just thanks for doing that. If you are like, hey, money's a little tight right now, I don't really have the money to do it, how else can I help out? 5-star reviews really help us, especially with iOS 11. It is really hard to find and discover new podcasts. And 5-star reviews are what helps us stay in the top 8, which is kind of what you need to be in to be found. If someone searches Hearthstone, they're going to only get 8 podcasts shown, which is kind of scary. I hope they fix that. And Well Met in the Payload, we are thankfully pretty comfortably in this top 8, so it's not a huge deal, but it helps us stay there. And it also, if there's other stores that or other podcasts that you enjoy who aren't in the top 8, you should go leave them a 5-star review too, because that can help them get in there and help more people discover their show. So do that. Just head on over to iTunes, type in Hearthstone or Well Met, and you'll see us right there. Whew. All right. That's it. Oh, yeah. Don't forget to send us your emails. Just your thoughts, questions for the show, any ideas you might have. Again, I want to hear what you guys think about our more countering series, as well as our rookie mistake series. Love to know what you think. But besides that, Danny, what about you? Shout outs for the week. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at DannyDonuts_HS. And you can find my Twitch, DannyDonuts45.
Awesome. What about you, Ray? Shout outs for the week. Where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at PG_RayC. I really appreciate all the people who follow me, ask me questions on Twitter, and just interact with me in general. I have no friends, obviously, so I need that.
He blows me off all the time, though, so doesn't respond to my tweets.
What does that say about you, though, John?
It says I'm not your friend. Says that you'd rather be lonely than be my friend. That's what that says. Ouch.
Oh, boy.
Are you going to be at TwitchCon this year?
I will unfortunately not be at TwitchCon. That is the same weekend as DreamHack Denver. But I know a lot of the people who found me through this show are actually going to be at DreamHack Denver, which is really cool. And I'm very excited to meet them.
I should have been at DreamHack Denver. I was going to, because I'm from Denver. I live here. And how cool is it to be part of a dream hack? But our panel got approved for TwitchCon. I'm like, that was my thing as I go. If our panel gets approved for TwitchCon, I'm going to TwitchCon. Otherwise, I'm just going to go to DreamHack Denver. So I will not be at DreamHack Denver, but I will be at TwitchCon. You can find us by looking at the podcasting on Twitch panel. I'm going to be doing that with Chanman V. You may know him from great shows like Value Town and The Overview and The Streamer Showdown. And Pat Crane, who you know is one of the biggest Blizzard podcasting juggernauts that ever were to podcast about Blizzard game. So it's going to be us three talking about podcasting on Twitch. Everything from networking to putting on a great show to writing good show notes to finding the right co-hosts to getting the right gear. It's going to be awesome. I'm really excited and super humbled to be presenting with those guys. You can find me everywhere at Kick Tripod. And then you can, that's twitch.tv/kicktripod and twitter.com/kicktripod. Don't forget to check out the payload at payload.blizzpro.com if you like Overwatch stuff. And I also do a little show with Minnesota Twins closer Trevor May. We do a little show on Saturday mornings called The Weekly Intake. It's just a fun little variety gaming show. Just go to your favorite podcast catcher, type in The Weekly Intake, and you can check that out. Thanks for joining us for episode 126 of Well Met. You can join us live every Monday at 7 p.m. Pacific time at twitch.tv/blizzpro. And you can also find more awesome Hearthstone content throughout the week at hearthstone.blizzpro.com. JR is away working on BlizzPro, making it an awesome website. And there's so many good articles coming from BlizzPro right now. You should be checking it out. If you have an RSS feed reader, you should put BlizzPro on there. Trust me, you won't regret it. Last but not least, tweet us at WellMetPodcast or at WellMetPodcast or email us at WellMet@BlizzPro.com with comments, questions, and ideas you have for the show. And of course, a special thank you to Jake Buttono for our awesome intro and outro music. Thank you so much for tuning in to episode 126. We'll see you guys next week. Love you guys. Bye-bye.